Mics are live.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is it is October 31st, 2019, 1:02 p.m. I'm Commissioner Brian Crashus, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. This is a work session on Russo Wind Project, case number PU-19-28 and PU-19-29. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Christman?
Thank you. No opening comments, though.
And then Commissioner Fedorchuk, you're the portfolio holder, but I think we'll start by having legal counsel and staff introduce themselves for the record.
Good afternoon. Zach Pelham on behalf of BSC Advisory Council.
Adam Renfant with staff.
Okay, thank you. And then we have someone on the bridge as well.
Yes, this is Molly Smith with Fredrickson and Byron on behalf of Russo Wind Partners, LLC.
Okay. Welcome, Molly. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Absolutely. Thank you. So since our last work session, there's been a few. It seems like it boils down to three outstanding issues, but I could be off on that, Zach. But we really have the laborers' request. We have the interconnection issue and the issue regarding with the Air Force Base, and there's been some updated information in each of those. So maybe you can just walk us through each of those issues, and if there's any others, we can add those to the list. But we can go through those three issues and see where we're at.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. I agree. Three issues, as you outlined, and I spoke briefly with Adam here, and he agrees. We see three remaining issues, and we can take them in whatever order you'd like, Commissioner. They each have their own intricacies, but the ADLS information, we've received updated information from the company. The company retained Capital Airspace Group as its expert to consultant to consult and liaise with the Minot Air Force Base and the DOD clearinghouse on the issues related to the ADLS, as well as the potential for a LID system, light reduction, light mitigation, or light lessening. I don't have it right here in front of me what it's called. It's LIDS is the acronym, though. So I can go through that. The other issue is the interconnection question. On that, there is, and I spoke with Ms. Smith earlier today, and on the status of the company having an interconnection agreement, they do not. Ms. Smith assures me, though, that the company is actively seeking that, actively working on that, and all indications are, from my conversations with Ms. Smith, are that the company is going to be seeking an interconnection agreement. They just don't have one right now, so that kind of sums up that. I know Commissioners Christman and Crashus both had questions as to what perhaps our role is as the authority citing these cases, as far as whether or not a company does not have an interconnection. I can address those issues. And then the third and final issue that we need to cover is Liona's request to have a reporting mechanism for where the workers are from if the project gets approved and if it gets built. And that those are the three issues summarized.
And I think you should go through them just in the order they
okay.
outlined. So
great. That's the order I would have done it, and maybe that's subliminally why I did that. But okay, so we requested additional information on the ADLS system. You'll recall that at the hearing, and really I want to make this very clear to you all, and I think you all understand, but this issue was not known really until right before the hearing related to the Minot Air Force Base's issues with the ADLS. And the company did work with the Air Force Base, did review everything with them in advance of the hearing, well in advance, months in advance. It was not raised to the company until right before the hearing. So I want to make it clear that it's not necessarily anyone's fault for not bringing this issue up. It became an issue really at the hearing and after the hearing as to the concerns indicated by the Air Force Base, and quite frankly, after the hearing, the concerns expressed by the Air Force Base as to its concerns with the ADLS system really became greater than what they were known at the hearing even. But long and the short story of it is, Capital Aerospace, which I mentioned is the consultant for Russo Wind, has been meeting with DOD's clearinghouse, and I understand meets on a weekly basis, and in fact, that group just recently met with them, I believe last week it was indicated to me this morning in talking to Ms. Smith. But long and short of it, the Air Force Base is not in favor of an ADLS system for the reasons that it outlined and were provided in late filed Exhibit 51C. And I would just note, apparently, and I didn't know this until it was brought to my attention just now, but 51C on the docket is actually mislabeled as Capital Airspace Group Memorandum. That is actually the email from the Air Force Base explaining why they oppose the ADLS. And just briefly, 51C, I'll just briefly highlight a few of the items that the Air Force mentions to the company, poses multiple safety and tactical threats to the helicopter operations. In the missile fields, we are against the employment of ADLS and partial implementation. And advocate, and they also want the MVG compatible lighting, which I think that the company has already agreed to. That's not an issue. They question the reliability of the systems as to small aircraft operating at low altitude. Apparently, they view the FAA testing as primarily being planes, fixed-wing centric, and not helicopter base. And then they also bring up a concern of a third party potentially being able to track those aircraft in the event there is a response. So that you have 51D.
I have a question on that.
Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner.
If I can. So the Department of Defense, you had mentioned that they are the clearinghouse. Who has final say?
The FAA has final say. And the FAA, from what I understand, Commissioner, will not approve an ADLS system if the DOD opposes it.
Opposes it. Okay.
That's my understanding.
All right. So in the past, and I believe they provided an exhibit on a previously cited facility, wind facility, that was essentially surrounding one of the missile sites. And I couldn't help but wonder, how did that make it through?
You know, that is a very good question, Commissioner.
And the encroachment is significant.
I don't have an answer for you. And it was similar sentiments were expressed to me in a conversation I had with Ms. Smith earlier today, as indicating that, a similar area-wise wind farm it's been, cleared for this. So, I can't explain it. All I can explain, though, is in this case, there is significant resistance by the Air Force for the ADLS technology.
Well, the previous one hasn't been approved for ADLS. It was approved for construction in that area. There's two issues. One is ADLS. The other issue is the towers in the missile field. And both of those are issues in this, but they seem to have dealt with the towers.
The towers have been dealt with, yes. So they've agreed to remove, I think, towers in this case.
The other site that was previously approved doesn't have ADLS.
And I understand that, but I'm just, if you had to retrace, or we went back in time a little bit prior to that facility being constructed, I don't think it would make it through in the same fashion.
Yeah.
No, because of this whole missile site. But I mean, as it relates to ADLS, which is kind of the issue right now, my issue with it is when we were at the hearing, it was promised publicly that they were going to be using ADLS, and there was no talk about this issue yet because the Air Force didn't bring it up until after the fact. Brought up the location of the towers, but not the ADLS. And so is that an issue?
I think that the ADLS has, and look, I don't have a perfect memory on this, but my understanding of the ADLS guarantee was subject to approval of the FAA. And it was always subject to approval of the FAA. So yeah. I think with that qualification, that was what was represented at the hearing. And here it appears that the FAA is not going to approve this because of the resistance from the DOD. So that, you know, if the question is, you know, do we need to go back and reopen the hearing to entertain any public comment, someone who was relying on at least the belief that it appeared likely, at least, that ADLS was going to be utilized here. I think that's a decision ultimately for the three of you. I am of the opinion that it would not be required because there is a qualification that the ADLS system was subject to approval of FAA.
Yeah, I
think a concern, though, is we had a hearing and people have certain presumptions. And, you know, in our announcement, we didn't necessarily address this issue specifically. But for a couple of years, we've made pretty clear that we're requiring all wind farms to have that once it's approved. It's kind of different if we're doing this knowing ahead of time that it's not going to be. Mm-hmm. And it may impact, I don't remember if this had township or county zoning approval. Which level of government they're using there, but did they get local approvals based on a presumption that we would require this? I don't know, and I guess I'll get. I have other reasons that I feel even equally or more strongly about of why this should either, I think, really have a new hearing, but at the very least. Be opened up for additional comments or requests for hearing, but this is another problem that mm-hmm. their zoning approvals might have somewhat hinged on the fact that they assume we do this.
Yeah, and I don't know. I know that they have the zoning approval. They have the conditional use permits from the county, and I believe there's one township. For some reason, Brilliant Township comes to mind. I think that's it in this case. But I don't know what was represented to them or not.
Right, but at the same time, I would have a difficult time personally not deferring to the Department of Defense in terms of what their needs are and their desires are in terms of how these facilities are placed.
Yeah. I would note that.
Choice. I mean, we have to, the FAA ultimately approves it, so it's not like we can
override
them.
Right, it seems like it's a moot point to open up.
That's very true.
Another hearing.
Yeah, and I mean, the federal law is going to preempt state law on this issue. And,
well, I guess if I'm understanding Randy correctly, his point isn't that the hearing opening up, we'd somehow get information to overrule the FAA, but that the public might have a different impression of this, or the local zoning people might
That's
have
That's how I understand it as well. That's how I understand his concerns to be that as well, and not that the DOD has a concern, which incidentally I learned today too that the DOD did issue a letter of no objection to the project, subject to Russo withdrawing its FAA filings for the five turbines removed at the Air Force Base's request. And the comment period on the turbine location filings with the FAA ends today, apparently, and they do not believe any comments. So it appears that DOD has dropped objections to that aspect of the their
So with this fewer turbines, they're okay, and the
ADLS not happening, right.
It's being prohibited. They are okay with it.
They did look into, that's correct, Commissioner. They did look into the LIDS, light intensity dimming solutions, which is approved in Canada, apparently, but not approved by the FAA. They specifically talked to the FAA and asked about the status. Apparently, it is, I am told, in the testing phase right now. There's some flight testing that has been done, but they need more laboratory testing and additional flight testing before this technology would potentially be approved by the FAA. The discussion then with the Department of Defense as to the potential for LIDS implementation, which wouldn't be a total turning them off of the lights, but it would be better than nothing, right? Is the DOD would not review the potential for implementation of LIDS until after it's approved by the FAA. They're not going to look at something that hasn't been approved. What the company has proposed is to include a condition, and I know we're somewhat condition averse in some cases, but in this instance, something may be better than nothing on this particular issue. But the wording, and we can send this out, and I can give you a copy of this. But their proposed condition language would be Russo Wind Partners LLC will install light dimming technology or other light mitigating technology at the Russo Wind project if use of the technology is agreed to by the Minot Air Force Base and authorized by the FAA. The technology is commercially available and it is feasible to install the technology. Is what they are proposing. And I said that kind of fast, and I can provide that after the work session. But that is what the company is willing, or at least proposing to do, on the ADLS.
Okay.
Well, to Randy's point, we don't have to issue a notice of opportunity for hearing. Is that what you're saying?
On this change?
Correct.
It's my opinion that we would not. Could you do it if you wanted to? You could hold another hearing. This is a change I believe what has been presented, as Commissioner Christman has indicated. It's not a change. It's no one's fault, but it is a change.
Or issue a notice of opportunity for hearing where the commission could still continue to determine the matter without a hearing if nobody requests.
I see what your question is now. Yes, that is correct. Absolutely, could be done.
And I'm not advocating that that be done. I just want to know, understand the options.
Yes, sir. That would be an option.
But it's still, to me, it seems like it is a moot point.
You know, and to remember, in this case, we had the issue with the publication not being printed the second time within the confines of the rules by the local paper in McHenry County. So we do have to have, at some point, a hearing on that. What's the word I'm looking for? The
transmission.
Thank you, transmission. I'm still spinning from yesterday's oral argument at the Supreme Court, so if I'm a little slow on the uptake, then that's probably why. But I'm thinking PCNN still in some respects. But the transmission line aspect, we do have to have another hearing on that.
And you did well yesterday.
Thank you.
Is a hearing necessary in that case?
Yes.
Aren't they requesting that to withdraw the application for the transmission line?
I don't think that they've withdrawn the application. No, I think that what they had requested is that we hold off on holding another hearing until they could, this was a month and a half ago, until the company could evaluate where they were with the interconnection, given what they learned from MISO and not being in the queue for MISO anymore. So they did not request to withdraw the application for the transmission line. They asked effectively more or less a stay.
Okay.
Pause.
I remembered that differently.
Yeah. At least that's my understanding, and I'm sure I would get corrected fairly quickly if I'm saying that wrong, but I believe that is the case on that. Nothing has been withdrawn. The company still fully intends to go forward with this project. They still want approval of the wind farm component of it, and would, of course, if it were ever to be built, would need approval of the transmission line component as well.
I actually think it may have been portrayed that way because that was the original, if I'm remembering correctly, but that might have just been some miscommunication internally or just the way it was presented, giving that.
Right. Well, I think when it all happened, it was like, wow, this is, news to everyone, and how are we going to handle it? And the fact is, the company, while it's actively pursuing an interconnection agreement, there isn't one yet. So, I mean, I can't sit here and speculate as to what it will look like or what it won't look like. But I can comment, and I guess maybe we can move into that unless there's more questions on ADLS. If we need to transition to the ICA.
Ken and Randy, when you get to the point of your issue, all your issues, maybe we'll outline them all together, all your issues that you think need to be perhaps addressed in another hearing or a request for hearing, opportunity for hearing. All right.
Okay, so on the interconnection, as we've kind of been talking about it already, so won't get too much in the background.
Before we
go ahead.
Go into this. Is this an issue for the wind farm or the transmission line?
That's a good question because it's, and I pause only because they're interrelated. I mean, because you can't have one without the other. So, I mean, I think it's related to both. And I think my opinion on it is related to both. So, I mean, I think we can proceed on it as to both. And if we want to, you know, separate that out and have a discussion on that, we can sure do that though.
Well, I don't oppose talking about it as it relates to this, but to me, this is really tied to the transmission line because the transmission line is being built to interconnect. And so to the extent that completion of the issues related to this hinders our work on the other component or the other piece of the, you know, the project, I don't think we should mix them up. I think this can be settled when we deal with the if we deal with the transmission line, at which point these issues will be further resolved too. But anyway,
And that may bring up. I mean, look. I mean, here, just come out and say it. I mean, I think no one likes being told they can't do something, right? But we have to look at this, I think, from the broader perspective of what the legislature has indicated in 4922, what the commission can do. And there's actually a North Dakota Supreme Court case on need. And that decision, which I had printed out here, here it is. It's application Nebraska Public Power District. It's a 1983 case, so it's an oldie, but it's a goodie still. It's still in effect, and the commission at that time concluded, as a matter of law, it does not have the authority or jurisdiction to determine need for this particular electrical transmission line, the Mandan line, or to deny access across the state of North Dakota. And the landowners were opposed to that and believe that one of the aspects stated in the notice is whether or not it's needed. Ultimately, the Supreme Court came down and said, well, that was that aspect of indicating need was in the notice. There was no statutory authority granted to the commission by the legislature to entertain the question of need on this electrical transmission line. So, you know, it's not, I would not sit here and tell you it's directly on point, but I think it's it bears relevance because on one hand, we've got, you know, a company that has applied for a wind farm and applied for a transmission line that is going to be used hand in hand with the wind farm because they have to get the power to market. It has filed the application as required under the statute, as required by our administrative rules. And from the commission standpoint, is it the commission's duty? Is it within the commission's jurisdiction to determine whether or not there's a need for the project? And this case says that that is outside of the commission's purview. And that, as your legal advisor, causes me concern if we are going to be taking up a discussion as to whether or not, well, is this project needed in the state? And I would advise you that that is, we can talk about it. We can discuss policy. I think that you all know this probably, well, you all know this a lot better than I do. There are a lot of moving parts to the wind industry right now. And maybe the temptation is to take this particular case because it happens to be the case that is on the docket right now where all of these other issues are swirling around. Do we take this case up and try to apply the policy ideas that are out here to the case, or do we apply the policies that have been upheld, preserved by this commission in past cases and apply that here? Look at the policies over here, and then have the, you know, maybe the legislature enacts new legislation as to whether or not an interconnection agreement is required before a company gets a permit from the commission. Because that's not in the statute now. That's not in our rules now. So if we were to take that step in this case, we would be putting aside all of the prior precedent that we have looked at wind farms, applying a new standard, which concerns me, because if we end up at the Supreme Court potentially, and I'm not, no idea whether or not we would or not, but if we did, and I think we have to consider that, we would be defending new policy, new procedure, and what would it be based on? We would need something to base it on, and we'd have to have something more, in my opinion. So I've, look, I mean, you all are the policymakers, and I am, it may seem like I'm stepping on your toes a little bit, but my concern comes from the legal perspective of being able to support your policy decisions from the legal perspective. And that's why I'm stepping on your toes a little bit on that particular issue.
So in other words, from a legal standpoint, if this company or any other company wants to build a facility, whether or not they are able to market their product, whether or not it's economically viable, is not a consideration for the commission.
Under the current law, I would answer that question, no. It is a private business consideration by that company, which has undertaken a risk to pursue this with its private business. Now, look, Southern Power is regulated, probably in many states, regulated in Alabama, certainly. They're going to have to answer to someone on this. But they're not answering to the North Dakota Public Service Commission as to what they are doing necessarily.
No,
they're probably
regulated.
Right. This part is probably separate from
their
utilities.
Okay.
Usually the development arms are.
Fair enough.
Can I add one?
I was just going to mention, I agree. I don't think our role is to assess risk on a particular project. That's up for the private sector to decide, not the commission.
And with that said, look, I'm not taking away the issues that exist with this interconnection and the ERIS and the NRIS aspects and all of the potential things that would befall a local power cooperative in getting involved. I am not at all discounting that. That is real. But what I'm saying is this commission doesn't have the jurisdiction to do that. And these interconnection agreements are regulated by FERC, not by the commission ultimately. And if our legislature wants to have some aspect that is to be reviewed, then it needs to give you the authority to do that. Now, look, I could say go ahead and give it a shot, but then I'm subjecting you to potential appeal and reversal, and I think that would be quite risky on your part, and if that's the direction, we need to take a very much closer look at that.
I agree with you that we have not in the past considered need because of this, and I don't think that I've thought about it, because I think that it is somewhat misleading for companies to develop these projects and make the promises to people that they're going to be developed and they're going to have this money, and they don't even have their interconnection agreement. But that's ultimately not our job, in my view. But to further add another wrinkle in this, this potential approach is MISO, at least I can't speak to SPP, but MISO, in its effort to manage the queue, is actually looking at different types of requirements for companies, and one of them is site control, that they're potentially requiring companies to have prove site control before they make it through the next step of the queue to show their commitment. And the site control is proven by regulatory approvals. So it could be a chicken and egg. If we don't let them have their interconnect, their approval before, or their permit before they get the interconnect, and MISO requires them to have the state permitting completed before they go through the queue, then a company can't proceed. So I think that that gives just another layer to the whole process that suggests that tying these to an interconnection agreement completed is probably not the place to go for wind development. And I do think that if there's some way we could make it more clear or be emphasizing in our own ways that this company or whatever doesn't have an interconnection agreement, and that means it's a good distance from being a reality, then we should and we can and should do that. But I agree that we shouldn't be tying the two together.
I was just going to say, too, in this 1983 oldie but goodie decision, I mean, the Supreme Court notes that other states, South Dakota, Minnesota, have a need component in their statutes. Mm-hmm. And if we had that, I mean, that would broaden your authority significantly. But we don't have it right
and
now.
And complicate it.
And complicate it, too. That's true.
Whose need are we talking about?
And again, nothing, and they talked about need in this decision, and the, at least at the time, your predecessors at the commission said, well, they argued, well, this was part of the discussion. We wanted to fully develop the case, which you do all the time, and there's that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But ultimately, the commission, after reviewing everything, determined, well, we don't have the statutory authority to look at need, and the court held that. Effectively.
I think it's interesting that the conversation is all under the assumption that these facilities push energy out onto the grid, which typically they do. But what if there was a manufacturing facility located within that footprint that required a heavy load, large load, and they wanted to use the power internally, add some type of a partnership, a value-added ag facility, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. then you don't need a transmission line. You need to gather, and you need to, you know, create a separate system, if you will, but they would be legally entitled to do that.
So that would the broadening aspect, I think, that
right.
Sure, for Dorchek talk.
I'm going to throw in here, I feel like we're off point, because I don't know who brought up any concerns that this should be denied because it's not needed. Here's my whole point on the interconnection. We held this hearing and announced it, and there were two applications. One involved the farm, one involved the transmission line going to a specific place and would have been interconnecting with MISO. People, I presume, believe what we say. Yeah. Now it's been opened up that, okay, I stand corrected that it hasn't been withdrawn, so it still may go to MISO, but it also may go to SPP. They have different ways of allotting cost, of allocating costs. I don't think I've ever said that this had anything to do with need, because that's not been established, and as you say, that's the court precedent that we've been working under.
There were some questions.
It has to do with orderly development. Mm-hmm. And in this case, if you're an electric company up there that has facilities, and this is built, and this could end up going into SPP, you might feel a lot different about this case than you did when you were confident that it was going to MISO. Because through open access laws, they are able to potentially use the facilities of the companies that are up there and established, and had no idea that that was going to happen when we had our hearing.
Right.
And could have substantial cost increases if this electricity starts flowing into SPP, and especially if it ends up costing congestion issues and they have to upgrade things. And so it's not a need issue. It's an orderly development issue. Do we just approve dropping something in on someone who's going to have to pay a lot of money to take care of it when at the time we had the hearing? They never even knew that that was a possibility, and so they never even said anything about their potential risk with this?
Well, I would respond, Commissioner Crisman, and I think that at the last work session, I took it, you know, one of the questions I had here is an analysis of grounds of potential denial based on the lack of interconnection agreement. So I suppose I took the line as to the need, so I certainly apologize if you know, I came across, I was suggesting that that was the only aspect to be looked at. I understand what you're saying about at the hearing, you know, all indications were there in the MISO queue, you know, they were getting updates. They would be getting updates. They anticipated, having an interconnection agreement. You know, no representations were made, however, of course, that they guaranteeing anything. So as far as having another hearing, again, I'd answer the same way as the ADLS. I mean, nothing prevents you from having another hearing to further develop that aspect of it because of changed circumstances. And as to Commissioner Crosius's question as to whether a notice of opportunity, that could be done in this particular case as well. And orderly development, I think that would potentially have, in fairness, due process, I think concerns would you'd have to allow the company the ability to respond to the orderly development aspect as to this issue as well. I mean, it's the company's right to present the evidence that we asked them about at the hearing. We didn't ask them about it, not through any fault of ours, of course, because we didn't know it was an issue. And quite frankly, in fairness to the company, not really through any fault of them necessarily either. Although they, you know, in fairness, they probably did have a lot more information as to what was going on with MISO than we did. But there's no indication that they knew that they were going to get this.
I agree.
Right. This price tag from them. So that's how I'd respond to that. I mean, I think that before I would be comfortable advising anything more, I would want to hear what the company would have to say as to the potential for early development. And then, too, it's, you know, what does the ICA, what kind of ICA? Is it a NRIS or is it ARIS? At this point, it's nothing has been agreed to, so there's be pure speculation as to it would be one or the other at this point. So I can't answer that question. That was asked at the last work session.
We are going to be having another hearing on the transmission.
On the transmission line, we are. To your
perspective,
point,
I think this should all be woven over into that and separated from this, the actual permitting of the generation facility, because I think that this is an interconnection issue that is tied to the transmission line, and we're going to be having another hearing on that regardless. So I think that it should be moved in that direction.
But if we approve the wind farm, and they open access, use existing lines there to go west with it, we may never have a hearing. At that point, they might actually withdraw the other power line going east, the other transmission line going east, because they know maybe they don't need it to go into SPP. And as I said, we could have some entities up there face substantial upgrade costs if that happens.
Well, to that point, I guess I understood that the interconnect was going to be at the exact same place, but that could certainly be something we could clear up.
Yeah, and I mean, I from the legal perspective, I don't think that there's any problem with what you're proposing to hold over the interconnection agreement on transmission. It is more natural, and the reason why I hedged a little bit earlier is because they are interrelated. But if the commission were to go ahead with a wind farm application, look, the wind farm isn't going to be built without the transmission line. So, I mean, in effect, you're not giving the proverbial green light to anything because the company's still got a lot of work to do. They've got to get an interconnection agreement. Even if we were to approve the transmission line application, they'd still have to get an interconnection agreement, even with our permit.
To Randy's point, though, do we know? I guess I can't say with certainty that the interconnection is not the interconnection, but that the transmission line is required regardless of whether they go to SPP or MISO. He's thinking
know.
They might be able to go through an existing line and not need a transmission line permit if they get an interconnect with SPP. That's what I think we do need to have clarified.
Yeah, I don't know, and I would have to follow up with the company on their position on that.
So, Randy, if it does require a transmission line either way, are you comfortable just tabling these interconnection-related issues for the transmission hearing? Because we know we're going to have one, and these could easily be woven into that because there are new issues. I mean, I'd rather not have to do another hearing on this and another hearing on the transmission line. I just think that's a lot of work for everybody.
I feel very uncomfortable in allowing a generation facility to set up there that could potentially be going into SPP and not having clarity on what their how they would interconnect with SPP if that was the route they chose. I mean, I don't know. We never discussed this because they told us they were going the other way. Mm-hmm. And so why would we have asked the question? But does some co-op up there have an existing line within a mile or whatever our limits on site? Maybe they don't need our approval to do anything else if they go to SPP.
True, but if we can clear that up,
I think all kinds of possibilities, and I really think the only way we're going to know that is if companies that are in this business and in the SPP footprint that are up there that could potentially be the ones who end up paying the costs are allowed to talk to us mm-hmm. and point it out. Maybe they're seeking some additional wind power, and we'll be happy with it. I don't know, but
I really think
that we need to know, because the potential of them going to SPP makes this, to me, a whole different thing than what we talked about in the hearing.
I don't think there are a finite number of options. There isn't an unlimited number of transmission line options up there. There's a finite number of transmission line options. So if they can clarify that their interconnect is going to be at the same place regardless through this transmission line that hasn't been, that we have to have another hearing, then are you comfortable? I'm not dismissing these issues. I'm just saying I don't think they have to be settled as part of the wind farm if we can clarify that piece of it.
I'm so confident that transmission line is not the answer in either direction. Because if so, why would they want to get one approved without the other? Apparently there is another alternative, what good is a wind farm without the transmission line if that transmission line is the only way for them to connect in any direction?
Well, I guess so. I'm not saying why
there,
the company did it, but
alternative out
it
there.
Is expensive to have another hearing, and if they and those interconnection costs were exorbitant, and if they can't get a lower one from SPP, why would they want to spend more money on a hearing? I mean, they'd want to cut their losses now as little as possible, because they can't get with SPP, and they have a $500,000 interconnect, or what, $500 million interconnect cost with MISO. This project isn't happening, and so they don't want to spend the money on a hearing. I think that's pretty reasonable, but.
Commissioner? May I answer your question about whether a Gentile line is required?
Zach?
Go ahead, Molly.
An 8 to 10 mile Gentile line would be required whether it went to MISO or SPP. So a transmission line is required for the project.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, well, so we can move on and think about whether, we need to do something more with this issue as it relates to the wind farm. We can come back to that, even after the work session.
Right. And one thing I failed to mention, I apologize, Commissioner, but late filed Exhibit 59 does include an update on the interconnection request, too, and I assume that, and there's also a memorandum that was prepared by Power System Engineering as to some quite detailed technical aspects that I will admit are a bit over my legal-minded head, but that was also provided as late filed Exhibit 59A, so if you haven't yet had an opportunity to look at that, it may address some of your concerns, or it may cause you to have more questions. On the request of the laborers union, you'll remember at the hearing, laborers had intervened. Mr. Kevin Prantis appeared. Mr. Cortina, who's here in the room here today, testified at the hearing. And the request boiled down is really to have a reporting and reporting requirement. Again, a lot of ifs in this. If the commission approves the project, if the project is built, that any labor, any workers who are building the project, that there be documentation provided to the commission as to their state, their residency state. And from what I understand, Mr. Prantis's late filed exhibit and motion that was filed with the commission, it's really to collect the data to for it to potentially use in helping the information be used to determine where the workers are coming from. Now, this is not something that the commission has ever required before. The company did respond. They provided a response. The company, I would kind of sum it up as not really necessarily being gung-ho in favor of it, but not in the end saying that it would resist it. The company indicates, it would seem that reporting and tracking requirement would be better addressed by the legislature if it was required and uniformly applied across the state to the appropriate agencies. The company indicated that labor reporting requirement, which would only provide information post-approval, is not relevant to the commission's consideration of a criteria to use in making a determination on the project's application, which I think is true. In the past, this or similar requests have been made in the Maricourt decision. The commission declined to do that, and that's if you want to look that up after, it's PU 08932. It's docket 238. It's the second amended findings on this particular case, on the Maricourt case, and it's finding 28, where the commission declined to do that. So, I mean, can it be done? I think it could be. I think really the question really for you all is whether or not, from a policy perspective, you think it should be done. There is nothing in the statute, that would prevent it. You can look at economic aspects, and plenty of economic aspects have been provided. The tax base increase, and I should also mention too that the laborers did include a memo from an attorney. I believe you're all familiar with Mr. Broughton. Derek Broughton provided a memo on his opinion that there isn't anything in state law that would prevent it. I did look at it, and while I might take issue here or there on some things, but I don't believe that it's something that you absolutely can't do. It's whether or not you should, from a policy perspective, because I think if you do it in this case, I think you're setting a precedent. Although I'll qualify that a bit by saying that in this case, the company did not ultimately, did not ultimately oppose, although it came fairly close, in my opinion.
So help me understand your legal theories, and I'm almost hesitant to bring it up because need was never my thing here.
Yeah, I know.
But it's a fresh example. So at one time in 1983, on a whole different type of case, it wasn't a generation facility in the first place, but
right.
The commission apparently did something regarding need, and the court said the law doesn't say you can adopt need, so thereby you can't. Now I'm just hearing you saying the law doesn't say you can't do a labor reporting requirement, so you can. Those seem to be
ways
looking at it.
You caught me on that one, Commissioner. I think if you look at the statutes and our rules on this, it does generate a more open-ended question because it deals with the economics. I do think that the company's point that we're looking at pre-construction application rather than post, and this would be a post-approval, assuming it's approved, post-approval requirement. How does it impact it from the pre-approval? From the laborer's perspective, they've outlined, you know, that it would, you know, go towards the commission may give preference to an applicant that will maximize benefits that result in adoption of the following policies, training and utilization, I'm paraphrasing, training and utilization of available labor in the state for the general and specialized skills required. That's our administrative code. 6906.08.01 sub 6. If you look at, and I was looking at them before our meeting, but there is discussion in 4922 that talks about economic considerations as well. So I think that aspect of it is could it be considered? But then I think you get to the question of, okay, so we're looking at this from the perspective of whether or not to approve the application. From the economic benefit standpoint, labor is going to be used to construct any facility. Okay, so there's no doubt about that. The company has presented evidence that, you know, approximately 200 temporary workers, you know, 8 to 12, I think, permanent.
Long-term
workers on this project. So from the company's perspective, it argues, well, we've already presented that. That's all pre-application. From the standpoint of the laborers, they've intervened. They have an interest. There are, you know, workers that they're effectively representing in the state that it's their responsibility from their perspective to get them into working on a wind farm project. And why are there workers from Louisiana or Texas or Oklahoma or wherever and not local laborers? So they are wanting to have an aspect to track that and to help their efforts in that respect. Is that something that the commission should adopt, should do? My point is it's in the statute as to economic development. It's a question as to whether or not, from a policy perspective, you all feel comfortable in doing that. What would it do? I mean, from the commission standpoint, you're going to be collecting this data. It's going to be compiled, and what are you going to do with it? I don't know. That part really wasn't made clear in the laborer's application as to what it would be. It would utilize it, but how would the commission utilize that information? Because the commission can't, and the laborers are not asking us to do this either, to be clear. How can we require, you know, workers on these projects to come from North Dakota? We can't do that, and the laborers aren't asking us to do that. They want to track, and they want to see that information.
How do you reconcile? You had mentioned accurately two points. 200, this is in the company's application.
Mm-hmm.
Economic considerations. So as you mentioned, would create approximately 200 temporary construction jobs and 8 to 12 long-term operation and maintenance jobs. And then they go on to say, in that paragraph, these high-skilled, high-paying positions would contribute payroll dollars to the rural portions of North Dakota. To me, they're broaching the fact that this just isn't a worker coming in from out of state that will contribute to hotel, you know, lodging and meals and whatnot. So when companies come in with the applications and they're touting that these are payroll dollars, sure. But then the work crews come in from somewhere else. To me, it just all it really turns into is window dressing on an application that really isn't followed through on.
Yeah, and I mean, as I recall the application, I think that there's some indication that some of the workers would be local. But we heard testimony from Mr. Cortina, you know, that isn't always the case. While he's worked on particular projects, doing the work, the company's perspective and they pointed out in their response brief that they have to look at it not just from, you know, wanting to help the local economy, but from they need to select a contractor that has experience in constructing these types of facilities. And then the labor's point is well, how you get experience if they never get hired. So it's a chicken or the egg type of situation. And I think that's part of the dispute here between the intervener and the company on that particular issue. I don't disagree with you, but I mean, it's in a lot of respects, the commission's got a lot of different roles in reviewing these siting applications. I think it ultimately comes down to is if you want to add this, you know, aspect probably all other siting cases you do, not just wind, I would say, likely. Pipeline cases would probably be the same, and gas plants and, transmission lines potentially. I mean, I don't know where you would end with if in this case, all right, we're going to do it here. That said, I mean, and I can't really speak to it from an administrative standpoint where you all are at, does it add much to what you have to do ultimately? I don't know. And then what's the value from the commission standpoint? I understand the value from the laborer's standpoint, absolutely. But what I am having a hard time understanding is what information that's garnered from this will be of value to the commission for future cases. I don't know. And I don't think that was really addressed or brought up, in my opinion.
Well, Brian, you've asked, you typically ask a lot of questions about the hiring and the local jobs and that sort of thing in the hearings. Are you thinking about a certain direction on this that you'd like to pursue?
Well, I also ask those questions because obviously to get the best of both worlds, we not only have economic development in the state, but we do it with North Dakota and regional labor. That's the ideal outcome. And I don't think anyone would disagree with that from an economic standpoint. And I realize it does become a question of not just sitting, pretending that we can sit in the CEO seat of these companies who do want to come to North Dakota and do business. But I do find it difficult at times to reconcile how these applications are presented. And I would suspect that in the future, applications will be modified to not talk as much about the quote-unquote or the economic impact. That's always the danger of having these conversations is companies just stop doing it. And we certainly don't want an environment where they feel it's difficult to do business in the state because then nobody wins. So I do understand that. But I'd like to think about some of the comments council made first before responding.
I don't. I mean, it's hard to say, Commissioner, as to what impact it would potentially have. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's often indicated, the tax dollars that are going to benefit the local community and the amount of outflow from the construction activities and hotels and restaurants and gas stations and whatnot. And that part is certainly touted and touted to the county commissioners where CUPs have to be approved, no doubt. What impact this would have, you know, that a requirement, if there's a requirement that a company provide a location of where the workers are residents of, I don't know that that's going to stop a company from touting the economic benefits, because they're going to want to make their project look good, right? I mean, and there are other considerations. The economic aspects are one consideration for the commission. It is not the only consideration. I view there are more important considerations, you know, the environmental impacts, health and welfare of local residents in the area, certainly in my opinion, would take precedence over an economic outlook of it. It's a factor.
From my perspective on these, it's one issue that is provided of many in the application, and I've always viewed the policy criteria as being just ways that the commission can help get a feel for the total impact and kind of weigh it on the whole standard of minimal impact. But, you know, because there's so many different policy criteria listed, and then we're expressly given the right to weigh them. And I think even there's language that says that we may give preference to an applicant that shows some of these things. But again, emphasis on may. We don't have to tie it to that. It's just that all this information is provided to give us a kind of as full a picture as possible about the project. From my perspective, and I did express this a bit down earlier, this request seems, you know, simple and innocent enough, and the company didn't come out and oppose it. But I have concerns about it, not because I don't value local labor or the importance of having as much labor as possible provided by North Dakotans. I think that's an important goal. But I have concerns of tying this kind of reporting to us as a regulatory agency in the permitting process. It suggests that there's some standard here that must be met or could be down the road be met by us to receive a permit, even if we're just initially taking information in. To me, those decisions are to be made by the business itself. We don't have the jurisdiction to get involved in those hiring decisions. And this kind of information, there are agencies set up to analyze and look at this kind of information, such as job service, commerce, through the economic development side of things. And that's where this sort of reporting, in my opinion, if it's going to be done, that's where it should be done. And it could be easily pursued by job service or economic development on a voluntary basis, and working with the companies and the industries where they see problems like this. If there's, you know, hiring practices where out-of-state folks are being brought in or there's not enough locals being done, then I think Job Service, the EDNF, those agencies that are focused on economic development specifically, not regulatory issues like us, that's where that sort of work should be completed or performed. So
I think that touting economic development benefits has become just kind of something companies do, whether they're seeking permits from us or incentives from other government agencies or just trying to develop a good name for their company when they're building or expanding something. I kind of like the idea at some level of some kind of reporting requirements. But at some level, I mean, that's going to take kind of an arbitrary thing. Is it anybody who hires a person or lays a brick has to do that? Or is it some level of size where you would start the reporting requirements? this proposal talked about local, and I don't have it in front of me now, but had kind of assigned their own kind of a definition of local too, but that's really arbitrary as well. And I kind of like the idea of some kind of reporting requirements at some level, but it seems like that's something that the legislature should be initiating and either tasking us to require as part of the siting process, if that's the level, or, you know, job service or the Commerce Department. Those are agencies that we seek input from, that, you know, they could choose what the level is and what the definitions are going to be and what the requirements should be, and come and testify to us and use our siting as the hook on it. But it just seems like that there's a lot of arbitrary components to this that really should be established by the policymakers.
I think it's interesting that earlier there was a conversation about the welfare of the citizens of the state of North Dakota and the assignment of cost for this particular project. And it seems to be inconsistent in how we're viewing it. I want to encourage the use of local labor whenever possible. That's why I bring it up at the hearings. I want to know who's going to be doing the work. And again, I do want the best of both worlds. Responsible development, utilizing as much local labor as possible. That's the best outcome for the state. And I think that does tie into, one of the two key pieces of siting criteria, which is minimal impact to the environment and the considerations as it pertains to the welfare of the citizens of the state. That is the best possible outcome. And I realize that from a legal standpoint, there are challenges in how we implement or guide that process. I think if the company is receptive, I think the more economic data we have, the more accurate we can be in terms of how our economy is growing. And you hope that it always is growing.
Okay. Well, we're not getting any closer to a decision on this. Where do you guys want to go? How do you want to move on this issue, on the transmission line issue? I think we might be done on the ADLS, but
we don't have any time frame.
No, but
on the transmission side, correct?
No,
that right now it's
active.
It's an
discussions,
unknown.
Right? I mean, that's,
and really, we have to wait until the company comes back.
I think that if there was a consensus to, well, I mean, one other aspect that I didn't mention, but you all are aware of, whether I remember right here or not, but I mean, we've approved permits in other wind farm cases without the ICA being in place. So, I mean, that's the other point that the company brings out, is why, what's different here? Why are we, you know, effectively, why are we being treated, differently than Glacier Ridge or Rolette?
I was going to ask, what are the most recent examples?
Yeah, Glacier Ridge, I think, is the most recent, and Rolette, I believe, is the other one.
Well, Emmons Logan didn't, that full wind farm just recently got rejected too, so we've done a lot of them without.
So, I mean, that's the aspect of it. I mean, we know we have to have another hearing on the transmission line. I mean, look, I mean, the company has indicated that it's still working, but, I mean, nothing stops us from just saying we're going to have a hearing on this transmission line, because we need to have one anyways. If we wanted to open it up to Ward County as well, because technically right now it only needs to take place in McHenry, because that's where the newspaper, for whatever reason, didn't publish the notice as instructed. But we nothing stops us from doing a joint county, McHenry and Ward County notice on the interconnection. We could delve more into the interconnection issues that Commissioner Crisman brings up and have that. We have to have a hearing on it anyways. And while the company may not have an interconnection agreement in place at the time of the hearing, moving this forward, it would move it forward in that we would have another hearing on that particular aspect. I from where I sit, and again, I'm the legal guy, so I'm not the policy, so you strike me where I'm at if you disagree, but I mean, the wind farm aspect, application aspect, I do agree with Commissioner Fedorchuk that can effectively be determined. I mean, we've got everything on the wind farm. There is the interplay of the transmission aspect, but we heard that there's got to be an 8 to 10 mile gen tie line for this wind farm project, and it's not going to be built without it. And I don't think we could that's a pretty safe assumption on that. So in some respects, if we my thought would be is to have Jerry and Adam here draft proposed findings on the wind farm. Move forward on the transmission line application, either just have it in McHenry or have it in both Ward and McHenry. Open it up to the concerns. I know that Commissioner Crosses has also indicated them on the interconnection not having been accurately through. Again, no fault of anyone's. It's just ended up not being the case at the hearing that we held. And opening up that way, so strike me down if if you have other thoughts, and I will not take offense. Believe me.
One thing that has crossed, well, more than just crossed my mind, it's just something that I take as a given. I don't think the company, whether they were to work out an interconnect agreement with MISO at a reduced rate from what they have been told in terms of the estimate, or SPP, I would have a hard time believing the company is going to want to build this facility without a reasonable interconnect agreement in place in terms of price. It has to be economically viable. They're not going to build a facility to lose money.
Sure. But they're also asking.
So that assignment of cost, though, it's more than just a valid question. It's a big question, but
yeah, and we can ask them that rather than kind of the go betweens. Well, I ask them and then I report back. Then because I mean, in some respects, we're really on the interconnection aspect of it. We're really no further along than what we were at the last work session, because we don't know what the status of it is. And I mean, I think if we do set something, I mean, it may light a fire in some respects to, there's going to be some hard questions that are going to be asked here, and let us know how you want us to proceed, company. If we set a hearing and they say we don't want the hearing and they withdraw the application, then we know, and then it's resolved from our standpoint. And I'm not suggesting that's going to be the case either. I'm just using that as an example as to your point that they're not going to build this unless they can get a reasonable interconnect.
Well, I think it's far from certain that they will build it. Case in point, every single project that was in the queue and this last go around, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've been told is every single project has dropped out. Every single one.
Okay, we've only got 15 minutes and we have a special meeting, so we've got to wrap this up. I see three paths forward. We can do a notice for an opportunity for a hearing on this issue and talk about the ADLS and the interconnection stuff, or the potential IRS and NRS issues. I can bring forward an order on the project, which I'd be more than willing and prepared to do, and may do anyway, because it's been since January that they applied, and it's taking up everybody's time, including our staff. I think, I personally think we have what we need to at least act on this project. But Or we can do a hearing. We can hold a hearing on the transmission line and hold everything up until we're done with both that hearing and make a decision, you know, on it all. I would prefer to do, I'd prefer to come forward with a notice or for with an order, but I'm willing to do a notice of opportunity for a hearing on those issues, see if anybody has concerns, and then move forward after that.
I would settle for the notice of opportunity, and I would point out that that doesn't mean that we have to grant a hearing just because someone asks for it. If, in my opinion, you know, if their reason is, you know, a potential objection that is substantially unrelated, similar to something that we've already explored and there's a good record on, just because someone asks for it doesn't mean we need one.
Right.
But if, especially in the case of utility companies or the permitting, the local permitting groups up there come back and say, you know, either with comments or requests for more dialogue with the company because they're going to be substantially impacted and this is different than what they thought in the first place, then I think the possibility is there. But the notice of opportunity would satisfy me.
And that would cover, I think, can we limit the notice of opportunity for hearing to the issues that we're seeking input on? Is that feasible, Zach?
I believe so.
So then I would view that to be the ADLS, the lighting system that it won't be used. Does anybody have a concern? Let us know. Or does that change your opinion? Or however we want to do that. And then the interconnection related issues. So we would do that. I would prefer to do that on our next meeting. I think the deadline for those motions is the 7th or something of next week.
I think the meeting is the 6th.
So oh, wait, that's for the next one.
Yeah. I was just pulling
Still prefer to get it going so that that seventh notice can start running. Seventh. But we can see if it's, you know, if there's time to pull that together. But and then get that notice running, and then we can see what comes in and reconvene or reexamine all of that after the notice expires.
What about the transmission line aspect that is faulty notice? Do we want to just hold up on that and see where the company is at as far as?
I think the company has asked us to wait, and we should just wait.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Then I think that concludes the issues, right, Zach?
Yes. I don't have anything else.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I think we're done.
We are adjourned.